Welcome to the Truth and Liberty broadcast. We believe we have a mandate to bring godly change to our nation and the world through the seven spheres or mountains of influence. To further this cause, we give away a product every week that will empower you to get involved in changing your life and changing our world. You can register for our weekly giveaway by subscribing at truthandliberty.net. You can also subscribe to our newsletter to receive weekly updates on guests, news, and much more. This is an interactive live cast, and we welcome your questions. To ask a question during the live cast, use the comment or chat features. Now, get ready to dive into this week's topics with our hosts on location in Colorado, USA.
Hello, and welcome to our Monday Night Truth and Liberty live cast. We're glad that you're with us, and tonight we are really blessed to have Matt Staver with us. I'll give him a better introduction in a little bit, but he's the head of Liberty Counsel. They're the ones who have taken on our case and have been defending us against the state of Colorado and the restrictions that they've put. And we've got some good news to share with you tonight. And Matt is just really a blessing. So we'll have him on in a little bit, but we want to give you an opportunity to participate. And we've got people standing by that you can call and get prayer and materials and anyway, just a lot of different ways. So this is Richard Harris. He's our chief counsel here, and he's been indispensable throughout this thing. Man, what a blessing Richard has been. And he's going to share with you some information, and then we'll come back and introduce Matt.
All right. Well, great. Thank you, Andrew. Yeah, it's going to be a great live cast tonight. Really looking forward to it. If you're watching tonight on social media, that's great. But you can have a more dependable experience if you just switch over to our website at truthandliberty.net, where you can watch the live stream directly. So we encourage you to do that so you won't be censored. And wanted to mention, as we always do on our live cast, about our resource section on the Truth and Liberty website, because we that thing is chock full of all kinds of important information, including a 24/7 news feed where we pull from our favorite conservative, reliable news sources. You don't have to rely on the mainstream media. And also, we've got information on there on allegations of voter fraud. I'll forget the allegations. I'm just going to say voter fraud in the 2020 election. Lots of information there, including a link to Liberty Counsel's website where they're collecting information on that too. And if you know of some voter fraud that occurred, you can fill that out. But some videos, some real helpful articles and things like that. I wanted to mention an important resource that's on there. A couple years ago, something came out called the 1619 Project, put out by the New York Times. And basically, it's an effort to rewrite American history, to accuse America of being a racist and a nation. And it has had incredible influence in our schools, and we need to push back on there. And I've got an article on there called A Critique of the 1619 Project. Encourage everybody to read that and share that widely. Also, A Faith Tool Impact by the Congressional Prayer Caucus, which will help you and your local church to become engaged in the public square as we continue to fight for biblical values. Really encourage you to do that. Wanted to mention we have some events coming up here. Just, of course, right now we're in the midst of our Christmas celebrations, and if you live here locally, we wanted to invite you to come experience our live nativity. It's a drive-by event where you can stay in the warmth of your car but still see the beauty of the nativity displayed in.
And let me.
Something's changing here.
No, let me say that we've already had 1,000 people drive by in the last two weekends. And this coming weekend, if you're local, Colorado Springs, any of this area, we're going to actually have live camels, donkeys, and things here. And so it'll be really special. We
encourage you. That's awesome. There's a big 3D LED display behind them, and it just looks like you're right there in Bethlehem. It's going to be awesome.
Awesome.
So come check that out. And wanted to mention as well that coming up in March, well, before March, there's a couple things in February. If you are in the Orlando area, Andrew will be in Orlando on February 11th through the 13th at a Gospel Truth Seminar. And And you can find details about that on the AWM website, awmi.net. And on February the 14th, we're going to have Truth and Liberty Live with Andrew Womack in Naples, Florida, hosted by New Hope Ministries and Pastor Grant Thigpen there. It's going to be live streamed as well on CTN Network. So mark your calendars for that. It's going to be a great night. Wanted to mention the Caris Men's Advance. I love the Men's Advance. That was the first event I attended at Caris Bible College almost 10 years ago, and as God was changing my life, and it's a great event. We're still doing it. March 11th through the 13th, Andrew will be ministering along with James J.B. Brown and Super Bowl winning NFL coach Tony Dungy. Greg Moore, Mike Pickett, Billy Epperhart will also be ministering. So you can register on the AWM website for that awesome event. And if you're not a subscriber to Truth and Liberty, I'd like to encourage you to do that. On our website in the upper right-hand corner, you can click subscribe. And what will happen if you do that, you'll be able to receive our weekly newsletter, which keeps you up to date on what's going on here, but also provides important information when things are happening in politics and government and the culture, sometimes ways for you to get involved. You'll get that information direct from Truth and Liberty. And if you subscribe, you're eligible to receive our free product giveaway. Every week we give away a free product. Last week, we gave away Andrew's book, a new book, More Favor, More Grace, and I want to congratulate Bob Reeves. You won that book, so you should be getting an email from us soon on this. And this week, we're giving away Andrew's book, The True Nature of God. This is one of those books that will change your relationship with the Lord. Most people think of God sort of in Old Testament ways as a mean, vengeful, wrathful God who's ready to execute judgment on you. And I'm telling you, that's not the God of the Bible. And this book will help you understand that. It's a powerful piece. And I really encourage you to subscribe today and be eligible for that. We want, as Andrew said, we want to hear from you. So your comments and questions tonight, you can post them in the chat section on our website. Or if you're still watching by Facebook, do that in the comments section there. And we'll try to get to your questions later. And wanted to mention also that we're supported by the generosity of our members. If you're not a Truth and Liberty Coalition member, I invite you to do that. You know, we've made it, Andrew's made it about as easy as we can. You just go on our website to the donate page and click Become a Member. And if you sign up to make a recurring contribution of just $5 or more every month, you'll become a member and we'll send you a free gift in the mail. And last, as Andrew mentioned tonight, if you need prayer, we have trained, Spirit-filled, Word of God-filled prayer ministers standing by. Just call in at 719-635-1111. And one of these folks would be happy to agree with you in prayer.
So we have Matt Staver with us tonight. He is the president and founder of Liberty Council. And just as way of introduction, when we had our run-in with the state and they issued us a cease and desist order, we started calling different organizations that we knew, and I mean very famous people, and they either didn't have time or didn't think we had a chance. Mm-hmm. And Matt and Liberty Council, man, they were just all over it. And so, man, what a blessing they have been to us. And he's got an entire full page here, a rap sheet of his accomplishments. And I hate to read all of this, but really it's impressive. I wish I had time to read everything that he's done. He's on the council that has over 42,000 evangelical Hispanic churches under him. Of course, he used to be a law professor at Liberty University, I think vice president at Liberty University. He's authored over 300 published legal opinions. He has his own radio program. One of the things here, it says prior to law school, Matt pastored several churches. He reads Hebrew, Aramaic, Greek, and Syriac. I know a little bit of Greek and a little bit of Hebrew. One owns a restaurant and the other one a pizza place. But this is impressive, Matt. We are just so honored that you have not only taken on our case, but thank you for taking the time, because I know that there's a lot of demand, and thank you for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you, Andrew and Richard. It's a pleasure to join you, and it really is an honor for us to be able to represent you in this legal case that is unconstitutional regarding the restrictions that Colorado sought to impose on places of worship. And it's just a real honor to come alongside of you. You know, throughout this series of lockdowns that we've seen, I know a lot of people have been discouraged about their churches and their pastors. And, you know, in retrospect, we've seen a number of pastors who were more cowardly in terms of how they dealt with this particular situation. But I tell people, you know, we have the privilege of being able to know people like you, Andrew, and your leadership, and you have always been right on and bold and saying the right things and willing to do the right things, and it's really an honor for us. So the honor is all of ours.
Well, we've got some good news to share with the people, and it's not quite over. We're very close to the end, but I'll let you say it so that I don't say something wrong. Explain to the people what's happened with us.
Well, just a few days ago, in fact, the governor of Colorado, Jared Polis, who has been very restrictive against places of worship, has issued a new order and declared that places of worship, houses of worship, are essential and put them in the same category as what they call in Colorado critical businesses. In other parts of the country, they call them essential businesses or essential activities. It's at the highest category. Obviously, the churches, places of worship, your ministry, they've been essential from the very beginning, more essential now than ever, and the church has been essential for 2,000 years. But these governors oftentimes did not think so. And yet now we have a huge change in Colorado. So these restrictions that have been on places of worship have now been lifted by this new order. And here's the sequence. We've been litigating, and from the very beginning, Andrew, as you well know, and Richard, you as well, and those of us on the legal team, we've been arguing very clearly that these restrictions on churches and places of worship are unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. The government cannot tell you that you're going to be treated in a discriminatory manner, particularly regarding other similar activities. But even more so, churches, places of worship, have not only equal activity, equal rights, but preferred protection under the Constitution, under the First Amendment. So we've argued that. And the Supreme Court on Thanksgiving Eve, day before Thanksgiving, issued a very strong decision regarding churches and synagogues out of New York. And it could not be more clear. We also had a case pending at the U.S. Supreme Court out of California, Harvest Rock Church and Harvest International Ministry, collectively about 170 churches in California alone. And a week later, the court ultimately accepted our request and vacated, set aside all of the lower court orders that went against us, and told the lower courts, here's the roadmap, you need to follow it now. And that roadmap is very clear. When you follow that roadmap, the ultimate conclusion, inevitably, is these restrictions are unconstitutional. So that was on a Thursday, and Monday after that, by 5 o'clock p.m., this new executive order that was issued on Monday, just a 1.5 business days after the Supreme Court's decision, the governor issued his order and said by 5 o'clock Colorado time, Mountain time, all these restrictions on churches are gone. So that's the sequence, and Colorado has now become the first state in the union after the two Supreme Court decisions to see the light and do the right thing. And thanks to your ministry for standing up against the tide, because at the end of the day, we're winning this battle in Colorado, and we're going to win it across the country as well.
And, you know, there's a lot of people that'll be watching that aren't in Colorado or even in the United States. They'll be watching from all over, and they may not know, but Colorado has been one of the most liberal states. We have a Democratic governor that is an open practicing homosexual. We have a Senate and Congress that is all Democrat control. And for them to be the first to respond to this just kind of surprised me. Did it surprise you the way they responded?
Well, you know, when you read the opinion, it's pretty clear. You would have to be tone deaf and completely unable to read to not get the message. But on the other hand, these governors that have tasted this power, they've become drunk on the power. And by just one little printed out document, releasing it to the media, this single individual in the governor's mansion has gotten away with all kinds of violations of the Constitution and our freedom, including religious freedom. And they've gotten away with it over and over and over again. I remember, Andrew, when we filed the case, Remember when we had the conversation, your governor has been very busy. There's more executive orders that he issued than any other cases that we've been involved in. I don't remember, but it was somewhere between 60 and 80 at the time, and more have issued since then. So once they've gotten used to that power, even though they see the handwriting on the wall, they're reluctant to give it up. But fortunately, your governor saw the light, and every other governor is going to see the light. And I think, you know, here's why. There's legal challenges in Colorado, and we're representing your ministry in that legal challenge, and there's other ones out there as well. And they don't want to ultimately, I think, come to the end of the day defending a frivolous action at this point based upon what the Supreme Court has already said and end up paying a lot of cost and fees for this frivolous action. So Colorado's the first one, but it's not going to be the last one. I think the dominoes are going to fall. We have the keys, if you will, to open up the jail cells that they've tried to put the churches and Christians in. But oftentimes we're going to have to go cell by cell by cell, case by case, state by state, but we'll get it done. And these dominoes are going to fall across the country.
And Matt,
this is a good precedent around the world.
And Matt, you know, we've been really blessed by the Lord that our partners stepped up and our income is up like 5% over what it was last year. It's a record income year. Our calls have gone through the roof. We will handle over 550,000 calls this year. So the point I'm making is it's not that we were suffering and had to file suit because this had shut our ministry down. We have prospered in spite of this, but it was just the fact that they do not have the right to exercise the control, and that's the reason that I stepped up, and that's exactly the reason that you took this case. When we called the other people, it was all about, well, we aren't sure we could win or whatever, and man, you were on this from the very beginning because you saw it as a First Amendment constitutional right.
Yes, it is a constitutional right under the First Amendment. It's very clear. In fact, if you go back to 1947 in the Supreme Court's Everson versus Board of Education case, it dealt with the Establishment Clause, saying that government can't establish a religion. And in that particular decision, and it's never been overruled, it's still the precedent of the Supreme Court, they said very clearly that the First Amendment Establishment Clause means at least this. And then they started ticking off what it means that the government can't establish a religion, a national church. They also said that neither the state nor the federal government can force someone to attend church against their will, nor force them to stay away from church against their will. And that's exactly what these executive orders have done. They're forcing people to stay away from church against their will. And that's very clear. And then, of course, the free exercise clause, the government can't interfere with the free exercise of religion. And when you have a facility like at Karis Bible College, you have 5,000 seats that you can actually accommodate, 3,100 in a very large, beautiful church-like auditorium, a great venue. And when the government comes in and says that you can only have a small number of people in there, even though you can spread them out and you can have more than enough social distancing and do every other thing, but they're not even going to give you the opportunity to do it. But for the abortion clinic, you can have as many people in there and kill babies. You can have the warehouses of Amazon, and there's several of them there in Colorado. You can have those packed, working 24/7. You can have the casinos operating, and there's a number of them in the same county, 12 of those casinos. I think 11 of them operate 24/7. Those can operate, all these other places can operate, but churches, places of worship, no, we're going to discriminate against you. It's pretty clear that at the end of the day, that we'll win that. Even though you may lose some battles along the way, part of that is judges not wanting to follow the Constitution, but fortunately, the Supreme Court has now stepped in and they've drawn a line in the sand. And that's the line that we all stood on from the very beginning.
And Matt, we want to get into talking about the election because I don't think that all of the cards have been played by Trump yet. But before we do that, would you just give a little bit of background on Liberty Counsel? You founded that, and I just want the people to know that you took our case and you have never mentioned money to us one time. We've given you one offering, and I just sent another one today. you'll be getting it this week. But you do this. I don't know exactly how you fund it, but tell the people about Liberty Council and how they could participate if they want to be a part of this.
Oh, well, thank you, Andrew. Appreciate it. And certainly the website is very easy to go to. It's just lc.org, the letter L for Liberty, the letter C for Council, lc.org. You can go there, learn more about us, and you can donate right there online on that webpage. You can just hit the donate button. But Liberty Council, Anita and I, who's also my very best friend, and she's also an attorney, and she and I founded Liberty Council in 1989. I was a pastor and had a private law firm that we started, and we started Liberty Council. And we began in the defense of the sanctity of human life and religious freedom. We have since included the defense of marriage and God's design for the family. We did that in the early 1990s. But we work all over the United States. We're in all 50 states in terms of our ministry. We're headquartered in Florida. We have offices in Virginia and also in the nation's capital. We have a office right across from the U.S. Supreme Court in an amazing ministry location and outreach in the nation's capital. But we do all of this pro bono at no cost. We're a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contributions are tax deductible. And it's our ministry. And our ministry is helping people through the ministry of law to maintain the doors of the gospel to stay open, to defend churches like in this particular situation, to defend the sanctity of human life. We represent Sandra Merritt in California, who ultimately is now facing criminal charges and a federal lawsuit from Planned Parenthood because she and David DeLayden did the videos of the conversations with Planned Parenthood and the abortion organ procurement companies and revealed the shocking revelation to the world that Planned Parenthood was engaged in harvesting and selling baby body parts for enormous profits by these organ procurement companies. And as a result of that, California came after her, and we're defending her at no cost. It's one of the most expensive defenses cases we have. But as a result of that, Planned Parenthood got defunded in many, many states around the country.
Praise
as a result of that particular bravery of these two individuals, and one of them is our client, Sandra Merritt. She stands to lose everything, but she stood for the sanctity of human life. So we have cases all over the country on a wide variety of issues, and all that we do, Andrew, is done pro bono because that's our ministry. And like I said, it's a privilege to be able to work with you and to minister alongside of you so that you can keep your focus on where God has called you, and we can deal with the legal challenges to maintain the opportunity for you to be able to continue to share the gospel and to have the conferences and events that you do have.
Well, Matt, we have a lot of people that watch this on a regular basis, up to, I think, 80,000 that we've seen. And then, of course, these programs are also archived. But for those of you watching, and you are supportive of us and what we've been doing, I ask you to go to lc.org and just contribute. You know, if we had 80,000 people that gave $5 tonight, that'd be $400,000. Mm-hmm. That'd be a big help. And so we encourage you to do that. And I know that many of you would love to do it, and we couldn't have done what we've done without Liberty Council. They've been a blessing. So, Matt, we want to ask you about the elections. You know, the Supreme Court refused to hear the lawsuit that Texas brought. And what's your opinion on this? Was this a correct response? You're a lawyer. You deal with this. Was this a correct response? And is it the last card that they had to play? What's happening?
I don't think it was the correct response. You know, Justice Alito and Justice Thomas both said that the Supreme Court should have taken the case. But on the end of at the other end of the spectrum, it was a decision based upon standing, which is a legal term, and that is you have to have a direct personal injury in order to bring a case. And so they said Texas didn't have the direct injury to Texas because of what happened in Georgia, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. I actually think they do, but they said they didn't have that direct injury. On the other hand, it's clearly not over. First, there's a case that's been pending at the U.S. Supreme Court out of Pennsylvania, and it's still there. And it deals with some of the issues that Texas brought to the Supreme Court. but on a smaller scale. Texas looked at all four states. This is just Pennsylvania, and it's about the absentee or the mail-in voting ballots. We can talk about that in a minute. But the merits of the Texas case are very serious, and the Supreme Court never ruled on that. Who has standing to bring that? Who has the direct injury? Certainly President Donald Trump does. So I believe that he can and should immediately file in Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, and also include Arizona, by the way, file that same lawsuit or a version of it, just change his name to the president, Donald J. Trump. He clearly has standing. The merits of the case are very clear, and I think they have a very strong decision. We can talk about the merits of the case in a minute, but I think there's a lot of paths forward. Moreover, there's a number of court cases that are still in the process. And by the way, just on December 14, when the electors met, we now know that the Republicans in a number of states, Arizona, Georgia, and also Pennsylvania, Wisconsin tried to do this as well, where they cast an opposing ballot for President Trump. And the reason why they're doing that is they're setting it up for a contested election come January 6, when the new Congress is convened. And then if that is the case where we have a contested election on January 6, then it goes into what's known as the 12th Amendment. And then every state gets one vote. And there's more Republican states than there are Democratic states. So there's a lot of different avenues still left to move forward.
Now, Matt, me being a layman, would you just please explain something? When you said that they cast a contested vote, what does that mean? Did some people who were supposed to vote Democrat or Republican vote for the other party?
What they did was the Democrats voted for the Democratic candidate, but the electors that are Republican, they voted for the Republican candidate, President Donald Trump. So that has set in motion something that can play out later when these cases continue to be litigated and ultimately decided. So they did the right thing. And in Michigan, they tried to do the same thing. But the governor ordered the police to bar the Republicans from coming into the state capitol and wouldn't even take their a packet that had their votes. So we're seeing some very unusual things, Andrew. The fraud that we have been able to look at, and we've done a lot of research, is absolutely staggering.
So, Matt, let me read something to you here. This is from Governor Huckabee. I get his daily deal, and he was talking about that in Michigan, a judge allowed forensic examination of the Dominion voting machines there. And here's what their findings were. It says, we conclude that the Dominion voting system is intentionally and purposefully designed with inherent errors to create systemic fraud and influence election results. The system intentionally generates an enormously high number of ballot errors. The electronic ballots are then transferred for adjudication. The intentional errors lead to bulk adjudication of ballots with no oversight, no transparency, and no audit trail. This leads to voter or election fraud. So I assume that this is a valid evaluation. Is this going to change anything in Michigan and therefore maybe the elections?
I think it can, and this is just one of the many aspects of the fraud that's out there. It's not only the mail-in ballot problem, but it's also the computer software, particularly by Dominion, that now they claim they have about 40% of all of the votes go through a Dominion software program. So in Pennsylvania, in Antrim County, we know for a fact that that Dominion software program actually took 6,000 votes for President Trump and gave those to Joe Biden. And that ultimately is what is part of this legal challenge that's different and in addition to the case that's currently pending at the U.S. Supreme Court out of Pennsylvania. This is another case. And so the judge in that case ordered a forensic evaluation. That forensic report has come in, and it's very shocking, and you've read from the summary of that. And the judge then authorized the public release of that forensic report. to get that information out there. And so it is just another confirmation. And by the way, we know how this Dominion software came about. We have an affidavit from someone who worked directly with Hugo Chavez in Venezuela when the Smartmatic software program was developed. And he was in the meetings with Hugo Chavez when the Smartmatic team was there. And Chavez told them exactly what he wanted this program to do, to be able to sway elections. So that's how it was designed. And then ultimately what happened is it was used in the Maduro election as well. They wanted Maduro to win. Maduro was losing significantly. And at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, when Maduro's election was going on, they took offline all of the reporting. Sounds very familiar. Remember how they stopped reporting on November the 3rd? Mm-hmm. They did that in Maduro's election as well. They took it offline. They tweaked the computer software program. And when they were finished, they went back online. And lo and behold, he was way behind. But by the end of the reporting, he won by a vote margin of 200,000 votes. So how does Dominion get involved in this? Well, the Philippines wanted the Smartmatic system, and the Philippines has been fraught with fraud. So Smartmatic came in to help the Philippines, and the Philippines then, or Smartmatic then, requested Dominion to come in there and work with them. That's how Dominion and Smartmatic got together. And then we know that the Manila Times reported the same problems in the Philippines that we're now seeing in the United States, and we've seen that in many other places around the world where the Dominion / Smartmatic technology has been used. Dominion now then steals the operating system, and that's what's in the Dominion program. Smartmatic ended up suing Dominion because of the theft of their intellectual property. That's now what's operating in the Dominion voting system, and we've seen it happen in Antrim County with the switching of 6,000 votes. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. That's just one of the many areas of fraud, and it's much bigger than just Antrim County.
All right. Well, Matt, listening to this, of course, I've been following it, but listening to you, it's an outrage. It's an absolute outrage. And so the question comes up in my mind, how is it possible that we've had all of these lawsuits throughout these swing states and no judge has proceeded to the merits of this case, that we haven't had a trial on this or even a good faith opportunity to present the evidence? What happened legally?
Well, some of those are dismissed on standing because they're individual situations. But the one in Pennsylvania, for example, that we're talking about, it's still ongoing and the judge is listening to the evidence. There's other cases, obviously. I mean, we've seen it, for example, in the church litigation cases where we get a very strong case. We get before a judge and the judge just could care less about the Constitution. And it depends, frankly, on who appointed that judge as to whether or not they appointed judges that were ideological, that don't want to follow the Constitution, or constitutionalists. President Trump has appointed judges who are constitutionalists. They want to look at what the Constitution and the statutes say. But there's some judges out there that could care less what the Constitution says. They think it's outdated. So they're not following it. And that's why you take a look at Trump's litigation history as president. He sued more than any other president in American history. Hmm. And yet he's not lost a case at the U.S. Supreme Court yet. He's had these judges rule against him, even the Court of Appeals, and he's taken them to the Supreme Court and he's gotten them reversed. And so that's part of the problem that you see, and that's why we need to have these cases ultimately get up to the U.S. Supreme Court for final resolution. And some of them are making their way there and some are there.
And Matt, I know from just our experience that you were involved arguing our case in front of some judges, and you said in 30 years you'd never seen them do the things that they did. And it's just activist judges who, they didn't care what the law said.
Care what the law said. In fact, the judge in the case that we filed suit in originally in the federal court, when we were talking about the legal issues, oh, that's just form. She says, we're in a pandemic. Well, that just means you just throw out the Constitution because you want to throw out the Constitution. And that's the philosophy, apparently, of that judge.
Yeah.
You know what? That judge has now been proven wrong by the U.S. Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's not going to back that. But that's the kind, I mean, that's the exact experience we had, Andrew, in the first level of litigation in your case.
And let me ask, I've heard some of these people that I'd say the mainstream people are going to call them conspiracy theorists, but I know that you aren't a conspiracy theorist, so I would appreciate your opinion. But they say that these Dominion voting machines and the mail-in ballots were specifically targeted in states where, if it was taken to court, that they had a whole, you know, level of activist judges that they thought would block the case, just exactly what's been happening. Is that accurate?
I think that's accurate. And also, you can go back and look at who's the secretaries of the state in these particular situations. And so, for example, in Pennsylvania, you've got a Republican-controlled legislature, but a Democratic secretary of state. And you have that in some of these others. How did these secretaries of state get put in that position? You go back to George Soros, and George Soros is the one who has been spending enormous amounts of money to get Democratic, very liberal secretaries of state elected in these states. Why? Because they are the gatekeeper. They are the firewall. And in fact, that's even been a term that they've used, that these secretaries of states are the Democratic firewall. And so that's where you see. Let's look at Pennsylvania, for example. Everybody has known up until 2020 that mail-in ballots are fraught with fraud. They're a playground for fraud. It's the underbelly. It's the soft spot. It's the Achilles heel of voting. It's the most vulnerable area to commit fraud in voting outside of computer software manipulation. That's been known for many years. If you go back to 2005, President Jimmy Carter, very liberal former president, chaired an election commission task force along with Jim Baker. They came out with a report. In that report, they said, these mail-in ballots are problematic with fraud. And we need to do a lot of tightening to make them less vulnerable. But that's the problem, is the mail-in ballots. 2012, the New York Times said, mail-in ballots are problems because they are ripe with fraud. Politico said the same thing just in 2019, I believe it was, or 2018. Everybody was on the same page. And so when COVID hit in 2020 and the Democrats realized that President Trump has a huge following and it's likely they're not going to be able to win, they then started pushing the mail-in ballots. And when Trump said this was going to cause fraud, the media jumped on the side of the Democrats and said, no, he's lying. But everybody up until that time still agreed that it was problematic and fraught with fraud. And so here's what they did. In Pennsylvania, the area of most vulnerable to fraud, they made it even worse. Not the Republicans, but the Secretary of State. The state and the U.S. Constitution give the legislature the complete authority over the time, place, and manner of elections, when the elections will be taking place and how they're going to take place. It's the legislature. It's not an unelected, it's not a non-legislative Secretary of State. But what did the Secretary of State do? Secretary of State in Pennsylvania started saying, no, you can, instead of having the mail-in ballots earlier, we can get them later. So they're all going to flood in. And then we're not going to be able to count them in time for the election. That was changing the law, but the Secretary of State doesn't have the authority to do that. The legislature did, and the legislature wouldn't do it. So then they wanted to change it until, well, you can get them in after, 3 days after. And that's what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court did. But the Pennsylvania Supreme Court doesn't have authority over the elections, only the legislature. The ballots can come in 3 days later. In other words, you don't have to vote on November 3. You can vote on November 9 if you want to. They can come in later if you want to. That's just nonsense. And so that was the problem. Then what they also did is they went into some of the highly Democratic counties. And in those counties, in those precincts, they were not requiring signatures on the ballots. But in the Republican counties, they were requiring signatures. So they discriminated to give favor to the highly Democratic counties. So that's just one of the many situations that we have discovered. In fact, if you look at Pennsylvania, Biden won by 82,000 votes based upon the current vote count, which you can't rely upon. But over 600,000 votes were illegally cast in that state due to the Secretary of State's illegally changing the voting laws without the legislature's consent. 600,000. And if you look at the vote spikes when the polls closed on November the 3rd, Trump was leading by 700,000 votes in Pennsylvania. Then when you look at what happened afterward, these massive vote spikes came in, and that impossible lead to close, Biden amazingly closed it. Yeah. We also know that one of our attorneys who works out of our DC office, he was an authorized observer in Pennsylvania. He has a bar license in that state, and so he was authorized by the Trump campaign and the Republican Party to be there watching the counting of the ballots after November the 3rd, which they shouldn't have been doing that anyway, should have been closed. But he was there, and Philadelphia banned him from observing and banned every other Republican observer. So these ballots were counted, quote unquote, with no Republican observers, and that is illegal.
That's terrible. You know, you implicated George Soros as being behind a lot of this, and I just read an article today about even the Southwest Baptist Theological Seminary. George Soros has been paying people to infiltrate the Baptist, and they are now firing people if they speak against homosexuality and other things like that.
Wow.
I mean, it's, have you heard that, or is that something?
I've heard several similar things to that, and there's also another group that's been doing that to the Christian seminaries as well with regards to evolution and doing things along those lines as well.
Well, they need to come to Caris Bible College because yes. We aren't taking any George Soros money, that's for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let me give you another shocking thing here. Georgia, I mean, and this is just one of many things in Georgia. Biden's vote margin was 12,670, but 66,247 votes were cast in Georgia by people who were not old enough to vote.
Mm. Wow.
In other words, all of those 66,247 votes are illegal. And in fact, if you look at the ballots in Georgia, about 100,000 of those were illegal. Many of these were post office boxes that are against the law, and yet the secretary, you know, they allowed them to be processed. You have to have a physical address. Thousands of these people did not have residences in Georgia, and they cast votes. And this goes on and on in each one of these states. And it's all because of the changes that these secretaries of state did in these particular states to open up the floodgates for fraud. Plus, in Georgia, there's surveillance evidence in the actual counting of the ballots in one of the counties, where a woman with blonde hair and braids tells the reporters, and there they did have observers, that we're shutting down for the night. It was about 10 o'clock at night. We're going to shut down operations around 10. We're not going to count any more votes for the rest of the night. Everyone go home. And you can watch it on the surveillance. All the people left, the media left, the Republican observers left. There's a handful of people that stay around, and they're pretending to close down operations. Around 10:30, that same person who told people to go home had actually brought in a table earlier in the day and set it up. And underneath that table, there are four identical black suitcases. And so around 10:30 at night, they pull the cover off the table, and they pull out four black suitcases, and they begin processing ballots in the four black suitcases for the next 2.5 hours until 1 o'clock.
I actually saw that video.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Man, this is disturbing, Matt. It just means that, you know, I'm sure we've had fraud before, but it's never been public like this. And it just seems like they're brazen with it. And if we allow it to go unchecked, I don't know if we'll ever have another honest election. It's scary.
I know. You know, I think what happened is they went to plan B in some of these places, because I think, like in 2016, they were looking at the polls and the media, and the polls were all saying Hillary Clinton was going to win. And obviously she didn't win. Donald Trump won. And they're doing the same thing in 2020. Donald Trump's not going to win. Biden's going to win. And what happened is he was winning by extraordinary margins across the country. And that's why some of those states, with the secretaries of states that are Democrats, shut down the reporting, stopped the reporting. Never seen that before in history, where they stopped the reporting. And then the fraud happens with the computers and other things and the ballots, and they begin dumping these ballots in mass, in tens and tens and hundreds of thousands, and processing them like we see happening in Georgia, in order to make up that difference. That's, I mean, if you look at what happened around the country, there was a red wave of Republicans at every level, local, state, and federal. We have an enormous amount of new pro-life women, for example, that are now in the U.S. House, every level across the country. And that doesn't happen when you then reject the person who's at the top of the ticket. Yeah. In fact, the red wave of 2020 is even bigger than the Ronald Reagan wave of 1984, believe it or not.
I believe that. Wow. We need to see if we can squeeze in a few questions here. Yeah. But, man, Matt, you've been sharing some awesome things. Sure appreciate you sharing all that.
Well, here's a simple question on chat. What do we do as the body of Christ other than pray? What can people do about this?
Well, certainly pray. Obviously, that is key, because if you look at all of history, it was impossible for the Israelites to leave Egypt. And yet God said, let my people go, and it happened. So God will turn impossible things into possible. Impossible in our eyes, but nothing's impossible with Him. The other thing is, you can go to Liberty Counsel's website. We have a Liberty Counsel's website and Liberty Counsel Action, our sister ministry, lc.org/voter-fraud. And that will keep you up with some information. And the other website we have for our sister ministry, Liberty Counsel Action, is lcaction.org. And we're sending out daily emails with all information on the election. And it's information you're not going to get in the mainstream media, because they want to pretend like it's over and there's no fraud. And yet there's lots of information. So keep yourself informed, and you can inform others. You can do that at lc.org or lcaction.org. And then obviously continue to pray unceasingly.
And, you know, I know that Kristen Hawkins, what is her organization?
Students for Life.
Students for Life. I know that some of our students have gone out to Georgia, and they're knocking on doors. We've even got some people here that are sending postcards from Colorado urging people in Georgia to vote for the two Senate seats that are still up. So there's organizations where you can get involved and still make a difference.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right. Well, here's a couple of questions coming in tonight about martial law. Now, I haven't heard the rumor on this, but evidently some people think Donald Trump might declare martial law. What do you think about that, Matt?
I've heard that. I don't have any indication from the White House or anybody around the White House that that's even on the horizon. I think, you know, if you get to a situation where the courts ultimately decide, as they should, that this election was fraudulent, there is only one of two ways to fix this. You go back and you revote with in-person ID, and Donald Trump will win in a landslide, or the state electors, the state legislatures, appoint the electors, not in accordance with the vote, but they appoint them. And so the Republican states would appoint Republican electors, and Donald Trump would win. Either one of those scenarios, ultimately, I think we would have riots, more so than we ever saw. And at that point in time, I think the president would have to clearly do something for the protection and the well-being of the United States of America and all of our citizens.
Absolutely. You know, one of the co-founders of the Black Lives Matter, Prentice Cullors, said that she was a trained Marxist. And this was not just a spontaneous thing. This is a socialist takeover against Trump. And I can guarantee you, if somehow or another Trump remains president, they will go right back to the same thing, and who knows how we'll handle it.
Right.
It'd be terrible.
Right. Well, one of the other pieces of news today is that Attorney General Barr has announced his resignation will be effective before Christmas. How is that going to affect the remainder of the presidency, and how significant is that development?
Well, I think it is a significant development. Attorney General Barr has done a lot throughout his tenure since he was put in that position by Donald Trump. But at the same time, I think, you know, there's other people there that will continue on. So the investigation into the fraud will continue. In fact, that's what the president has indicated, that he's already going to put somebody else as the acting attorney general, and the investigation will continue and be ongoing.
So why do you have any information about why the Justice Department hasn't turned up more actionable information on the voter fraud? Well, you might have expected some, you know, FBI activity or something like that, but what's going on there? Do you know?
Well, I do know that there's some FBI activity, and there has been some FBI raids that have taken place with regards to some of the voter fraud. I know in some states there's been criminal indictments. For example, in Texas, there's a criminal indictment of 134 counts of voter fraud. There's one in California with thousands of allegations, criminal charges regarding voter fraud there with the mail-in ballots. I do know that the Department of Justice is continuing to investigate these situations, and they take a little bit of time. They don't move as quickly as we would like them to move, but I would think that, you know, time is of the essence, so it's not like we have a lot of time to drag this out, and more needs to be done. You know, I am disappointed that the Department of Justice, going back to 2019, had information about Hunter Biden and did not release that, but just did after the election. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have the Attorney General, and he was very loyal to President Trump, and he's done a good job. But what we've seen is that the people that work below them, these career individuals, they've been there and they think they run the country, and there's a lot of that in all of these different agencies. That's what President Trump was planning to do, is to weed some more of those deep staters out of there that think they're going to run the country as opposed to the people. And I think there was a concerted effort by a number of those different levels against the president, in addition to some of the Democratic operatives.
I believe that in the FBI, there is some deep state people embedded there, all the way back to Hillary Clinton. They didn't hold her accountable for the emails, and for just on and on you go. So we've been compromised in government, and I think that Trump, as bad as you hate to see these things, it's good. He has flushed this stuff to the surface, and it wouldn't have happened with anybody else.
Nobody else would have had the tenacity to do what President Trump has done. He's come from outside of that political model, and he's been able to take it on. No one has been as bold and right and strong on China, or on the deep state that's happening even in our own system. And I think one of the things that I've seen, it is one of the disturbing things that we've seen during President Trump's 4 years, and that is the media has become like the former Pravda of the Soviet Union.
Total propaganda.
Yes.
It's just propaganda. You can't trust them anymore, and that's been very clear. And the other thing that's come out is what you said, Andrew. He has revealed all of this problem that is embedded in the deep state, what we call the deep state, which are these career people like the FBI that started the whole Russia investigation, and they protected Hillary Clinton.
Yep. And so, you know, I've said this often, but Trump pledged to drain the swamp. And I've said he may not have totally drained it, but he lowered the water level so that all the critters are exposed now. They've come out of the woodwork.
You know, for a third of the Democrats that were polled said that had they known about Hunter Biden's laptop and the connection with Joe Biden, they would not have voted for Joe Biden. And that was unknown to them. It should have been known. They could have done some research, but because of the media, didn't want them to know.
Yeah.
And that information was kept secret by the FBI.
But with the voter fraud, their votes might have been recast anyway. So, man, we've got systemic problems here.
We do. Yeah. Well, there's a couple other issues coming up. One of them today, I think Kamala Harris announced that the Biden administration is going to pursue what she called gun reform. Can you talk a little bit about the Second Amendment, Matt, and what are our rights under the Second Amendment? How important is this issue?
And we only have 3 minutes here. It's going to have to be quick.
We have a booklet on that, a little Patriot's Handbook that we can provide people. But the Second Amendment is very clear, and this is what the founders wanted to have that in the Constitution, to make sure that the people have the right to bear arms so that government can be held accountable. They had the experience that in these tyrannical governments, the first thing that they do, obviously they close churches. That's why you got the First Amendment. And then they go after people to disarm them so they don't have any pushback. So it's a very important aspect to our freedom, both the First and the Second Amendments.
Awesome.
Excellent. Well, another one that's that a viewer asked about here, Christine on Facebook, will there be reparations for Black Americans or Native Americans? What do you think about that? And what's a constitutional perspective on that subject, by the way?
Well, the Constitution wouldn't say anything about that, but I'm sure that Biden and Harris are going to promote that. And the problem is that they have energized, they have given voice to a very, very radical, dangerous Marxist segment of our society. And those individuals are going to be pushing, God forbid, a Biden administration to become even more radical. So that's going to be the tail wagging the dog. Those will have to be legal challenges, no doubt, but it's certainly not something that's supported by the Constitution or, frankly, even common sense.
So we're just about out of time, but let me just say once again to the viewers that, you know, Liberty Counsel has been representing us, and I don't know for sure, but I know that Richard over here has stayed up till 2 o'clock in the morning writing things. And I think that Daniel, another person that works at Liberty Counsel, and some of the others have worked into the wee hours of the morning. And again, we haven't been paying them. They do all this free of charge to us. So I'd like to ask those of you who've supported us and been a part of what we're doing to just go to their website, lc.org, and just give them a $5 or $10 gift. And man, if we had tens of thousands of people doing that, I think that would be such a blessing. And it would enable me, in a sense, to be giving back to them for all that they've given to us. So Matt, again, we want to thank you for taking time and being with us. And thank you for everything that your organization is doing, not only for us, but many, many people all across this country. We appreciate it. You're a blessing.
Well, thank you, Andrew. It's been an honor.
And so we thank you for joining us. Remember, we do this every Monday night at 6 p.m. Mountain Time, and we have on guests just like Matt Staver, many different people, and you get a perspective that you wouldn't get other places, and I think it'll be a real blessing. So make it a part of your week every Monday night, 6 p.m., and tell somebody else about it. Go to our website, truthandliberty.net, and become a partner with us. For a $5 a month reoccurring gift, you can help us get these broadcast out. And thanks again to CTN
Amen.
For putting this on their network. God bless you. Thank you for being a part of this. We'll see you again next Monday night on our Truth and Liberty Livecast.
Join us next time for the Truth and Liberty broadcast. Find tonight's episode and related articles and links at truthandliberty.net. Truth and Liberty is viewer-supported. If you'd like to help us continue our live casts, you can make a donation at truthandliberty.net